You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
120 years ago, industrialist and U.S. Senator Marcus Hanna said, "There are two things that are important in politics. The first is money, and I can't remember what the second one is." In July, the New York Times reported that there has been an explosion of spending in political advertising on television, especially this year by groups that are independent of candidates' efforts to reach voters. Ian Vandewalker is part of a team at NYU's Brennan Center for Justice that's studying the trends in campaign spending. And their newest report, Dark Money Groups Dominate Independent Spending in House Toss-Up Races, is available at the Brennan Center's website. I'm very pleased that it brings Ian Vandewalker to our show today. Hello.
Hi. Good morning.
What is dark money and why is it called dark?
Dark money is money that we don't know what the ultimate source of the money is. So election spending has to be reported to the FEC. If you put out an ad saying vote for so-and-so, you have to report that spending and where the money comes from to the FEC. But it's possible to construct the organization that you spend it from in such a way that the people who give the money to that organization don't have to be revealed.
So it's not the amount of money, it's the source of the money?
That's right. Although there is a separate problem in which there are certain categories of spending that don't have to be reported to the FEC, so we don't know either how much spending or where it's coming from in those categories.
Because we've also heard about outside or independent spending. That's different from this?
Right. Dark money is a subcategory of outside spending, yes.
The Times quoted the executive director for the Center for Responsive Politics. He said the dark money groups have become a shadow party that's effectively impossible to dislodge, and they will shape, if not control, the dialogue in key races and therefore nationally. Several watchdog groups like the Center for Responsive Politics have reported on dark money. How do the Brennan Center findings compare with the other studies?
Well, what we're seeing across the board in our studies and others is that dark money is increasing in both the dollar amount and the percentage of election spending that it's taken up. So we looked at competitive House districts and found that the vast majority of money was from dark money groups that either don't disclose any or only some of their donors.
How can you track it if it's all done in a hidden way?
Right. So when these groups engage in independent spending, they do have to report it to the FEC and they do have to report some spender to the FEC. The trick is you can either sort of create a shell corporation that takes in the money and doesn't report, or you can spend through a nonprofit entity that's not subject to the same disclosure rules. So the spender will show up as Americans for a Better America or some banal named group, and you don't know whether that money is coming from a special interest or an individual person or where it's coming from.
Setting aside the issue of undisclosed donations and donors, how is the trend in independent spending going this year?
Independent spending, every year since the Supreme Court decided Citizens United in 2010, independent spending has broken the record in every election. And we're on track to do that again this year.
Even more than in the presidential election?
This year, I believe independent spending is on track to match 2012, which was a presidential election, and now we're in a midterm. So that's a new record.
Is undisclosed or dark spending increasing at the same rate as independent spending?
It's actually increasing at a greater rate. We're seeing more of the outside spending is this dark money where we don't know what the ultimate source of it is.
Are large donors switching to funding methods that allow them to remain anonymous?
Well, it's hard to say because you don't know who the dark money donors are. So there's a certain mystery to it, although we do see sometimes you'll see two groups affiliated with each other. One is a super PAC that reports their donors and another is a nonprofit that doesn't. And sometimes you can sort of assume that the same people are giving to both.
Well, the names that come up most often in these kinds of conversations are the Koch brothers and Sheldon Adelson. Does that mean that they don't donate dark money?
We don't know. We do know that the Koch brothers are one of the major sources, if not the major source, of a huge dark money network that churned $400 million through it in 2012, with this group giving to that group and that group giving back to the other group, and this intensely complicated network. Sheldon Adelson has spent, I believe, $100 million in 2012 of reported spending. And some of his associates said there was another $50 million of unreported spending. So to some extent, we don't know.
And he offered to spend it on Newt Gingrich's campaign until that died, and then just spent it on Mitt Romney's campaign?
That's right. He was effectively supporting Newt Gingrich's campaign until that wasn't possible anymore, and then he switched to Mitt Romney.
This is only guessing, I'm sure, but what motivates the big donors? Are they trying to influence voting or even buying votes in a way?
It's always hard to say what's influencing people, especially a group as potentially diverse as big donors, but it's hard to avoid the appearance that at least some of this big donor money is trying to get results out of Washington. Sheldon Adelson himself was under two federal investigations at the time that he was trying to help his favorite candidate win the presidency.
So it's not just a matter of millionaires and billionaires having more money to give. They're not always giving for the same reasons that small donors give.
That's right. I mean, Tom Steyer has said on the liberal side, I'm going to give millions of dollars to help climate change policy. And the Chamber of Commerce is one of the big dark money donors on the Republican side, and they obviously support, you know, sort of big business type changes. So sometimes you can figure out what's going on.
And the Chamber of Commerce right now has kind of split the Republican Party. There are people who are very in the party, mostly, I guess, Tea Party supporters, who are very angry with the Chamber of Commerce.
That's right. The Chamber of Commerce.
So this is not just a Democrat-Republican thing.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the in the primary season this year, that establishment Tea Party split seemed to be a source of a lot of spending on both sides. There were National Tea Party outside spending groups that were propping up Tea Party campaigns, and the Chamber of Commerce and other sort of establishment incumbent Republican type groups were on the other side.
My guess is Ian Vander Walker. The report we are discussing is called Dark Money Groups Dominate Independent Spending in House Toss-Up Races. It is from the Brennan Center for Justice. Mitt Romney made headlines when he said that corporations are people and that 47% of Americans are dependent on government. Have you seen any evidence to suggest how widespread that view is among the dark money donors?
No, it's sort of always hard to know who the dark money donors are and what they're supporting. But
that's why they're dark money donors.
Right. But what we have seen is it's across the ideological spectrum. There are liberal dark money groups that support Democratic candidates. There are conservative groups. And as we've seen within the Republican Party, there are sort of different ideological stations.
There's a lot of deniability in this area. Jane Mayer of The New Yorker reported on connections between the Koch brothers and a group that agreed to pay a record fine for disclosure violations. But don't the Kochs continue to deny any connection to that?
I don't know the specific example you're talking about, but the Kochs do have a sort of nuanced position about their relationship to the, as I said, $400 million network that has spent enormous amounts of money. They give some money, but other people also give money, so they don't claim responsibility for all of that.
Of course, this is all legal now, isn't it?
Yes,
as a result of Citizens United and McCutcheon?
That's right. The Supreme Court has, in recent decisions, eliminated certain campaign finance regulations that and made this kind of big spending easier. And interesting, one of the things that Citizens United said is, it said corporations can spend as much as they want on politics. But there's another part of the opinion that says that one of the reasons that's okay is because there's transparency and there's disclosure. Unfortunately, the court was wrong. Those things don't exist. We have wholly inadequate disclosure.
Did that come up when McCutcheon was decided?
It did, although McCutcheon, to some degree, is a different case because McCutcheon deals with inside money, contributions to the candidates and to the parties, rather than this outside spending that is where the dark money is. So the money at stake in McCutcheon was all reported, all transparent.
Could somebody go back to the Supreme Court and say, well, you predicted that it wouldn't affect it, but it obviously has?
They could, but the situation is, it's a little funny because, you know, when the ways you start these lawsuits is by challenging a law that's on the books and trying to get it struck down. So that means the sort of anti-regulation folks have a kind of strategic advantage in that they can bring that kind of lawsuit and get up to the Supreme Court. It's harder to say to the Supreme Court, hey, this law should exist, but it doesn't.
Well, both Citizens United and McCutcheon were about outside spending and limits on the amounts that were allowed.
Well, McCutcheon was actually about inside spending, about spreading out contributions across many candidates because there was an aggregate limit that limited the amount that you could spend on many candidates in the same cycle.
Is there a sense that if disclosure rules are challenged, the Roberts Court will deliver another ruling against existing campaign finance laws?
It's a kind of funny thing to predict because, as I said, the Roberts Court has struck down regulation after regulation. But in many or most of those decisions, they say strong majorities of the court says, but disclosure is okay. Disclosure is okay. So they've given the signal that disclosure is okay. But there are some who perhaps cynically believe, well, they're just waiting for the actual chance and then they'll strike that down too.
McCain-Feingold was enacted just a dozen years ago. It was supposed to address the problem of outside funding of ads. Has that law now effectively been overturned?
No. McCain-Feingold, there are parts of it that are still in place, and there are limits on the party spending and limits on the soft money problem that everybody talked about in the 90s. We don't have that anymore. The parties can't take unlimited contributions. And one of the things that people say is that it was one of the factors that pushed this money to the outside, to these completely unaccountable outside groups as opposed to the parties.
Under Citizens United, didn't the federal and state governments retain the right to require disclosure?
Yes, absolutely. Disclosure has been held held constitutional by the Supreme Court many, many times.
So we have disclosure but non-disclosure.
Well, no. What the Supreme Court said is it's constitutional for there to be effective disclosure laws. That still takes the legislatures, the Congress, and the states to actually pass those laws. And several states have improved disclosure. The Congress at the national level has not.
A listener, Deborah from New Jersey, called in to say that $5.3 million was pumped into the recent Newark mayoral election, and of that, close to $4 million came from Newark First, a pro-charter group, which was funded by a not-for-profit that doesn't disclose its donors, and that it went to the losing candidate. So there are two factors there. One is putting $4 million into a local election doesn't necessarily guarantee that you're going to win. But also, a lot of this money has to come from people who definitely want to see certain kinds of legislation enacted.
That's right, and that's one of the reasons it's not an easy out to the problem of money in politics to say that the big money doesn't always win. Because even when it doesn't win, the other candidate who had that spending attacking him or her for that next term is looking over their shoulder thinking, in the next election, those people are going to spend against me again. So if I have a chance to vote against their interests or for their interests, maybe I'll take the easy road and give them what they want. So there's a bigger perspective to say it's not just that the money lost in that election. I mean, I don't know the details of that election, but the money can still have an influence going forward even when their favorite candidate loses.
It applies pressure.
Right, exactly. It could be a threat. It could be a favor that somebody's grateful for.
The Brennan Center report mentions 13 House districts. What makes those districts stand out?
We chose the districts because they're listed as toss-up districts in the Cook Political Report. Essentially, they're districts where the polling is close enough that they could go either Republican or Democrat in the next election.
As of June, the House has 234 Republicans, 199 Democrats, and two vacancies. Even if both vacancies and all the highly competitive races go to the Democrats, the Republicans will still maintain a majority.
That's right, and that's one of the reasons, you know, we said $5.3 million of independent spending. It's actually not that much money. If you look at the Senate side, where there is a chance that the Senate will flip party control, the similar category, there's nine toss-up races on that side. There's been $67 million in independent spending in those nine races.
How has the change in spending altered the fundraising efforts of candidates? Do they not have to work so hard to get funds for their own candidacy because somebody else is doing it for them?
They actually say the exact opposite. They say they're so worried about the outside spender dropping in at the last minute and spending a bajillion dollars against them that they feel the pressure to raise money even more. They feel the need to spend half or more of their day every day raising funds.
But if they're getting support from the outside spender, that has to make life easier. On the other hand, it gives them a certain amount of deniability, a really nasty ad that upsets the the people who are watching it, the candidate can say, well, that's not mine. That was done by somebody I have no control over.
Right. It's absolutely true that it cuts both ways, and every candidate now wants a candidate-specific super PAC in their corner that doesn't face contribution limits but's going to spend exclusively to get them elected. And there is this idea, I don't know how true it is, but there's this idea out there that you can deny the negative campaigns. And it's true that the outside spending is vastly – what this is paying for is attack ads.
My guess is Ian Vanderwalker, the report from the Brennan Center for Justice is called Dark Money Groups Dominate Independent Spending in House Toss-Up Races. We'll be back with more right after this. We are back with Ian Vanderwalker of the Brennan Center for Justice. Their report, Dark Money Groups Dominate Independent Spending in House Toss-Up Races. One of the things that the Supreme Court said was that in Citizens United was that it applied equally to people on the left. The right unions could also benefit from the decision. Peter from the Bronx asks if there's any way of getting a sense of whether the money is coming from business or labor, and is there any kind of a breakdown?
Those things are reported, and they tend to vary a lot. The big Democratic groups get a lot of money from labor, and the Republican groups tend to get more money from individuals and organizations like the Chamber of Commerce that represents big businesses.
Another listener asks a similar question. Are there any donors on the Democratic side who donate as much as the Koch brothers or Sheldon Adelson?
No, that the truly huge mega donors, the Republicans definitely have an advantage. And I mean, the theory behind that sort of obviously is these are people who got rich and big business that are going to support the party that is perceived as the big business party.
One of the districts you specifically mention in your report is in New York. It's NY21. Where is that and what's happening there?
That is, I'm blanking on the city. It's an upstate district.
It's near Canada, isn't it? Near the border?
Yes, I think that's right. There was a that spending reflects primary spending, and was driven by, in part, a super PAC funded by a series of hedge fund donors, none of whom live in the district. And they strongly supported Elise Stefanik, who went on to win the primary, with both inside money in terms of a fundraising committee that sent money directly to her and outside spending through a super PAC.
On its Open Secrets website, the Center for Responsive Politics reports that the super PAC American Crossroads has spent over $750,000 this year in that district. Why are they so interested in that race in particular?
You know, I'm not sure I entirely know the answer to that. I mean, I think these national groups tend to look at places where they think they can move the needle. So they look for a place where they think there's a promising candidate that they are willing to ideologically support, and there's a chance to move on to the general election. I think that's usually the kind of calculus that they're going.
In the past, a candidate might complain, all this outside money is coming in to defeat me. That doesn't seem to work anymore because all the outside money is coming in on both sides.
It's true. I mean, now that's a part of every candidate's strategy. It has to be, how do I sort of encourage outside spending on my side as well as the other side?
The question you hear most often, I'm sure, is haven't donors and politicians always sought to get around disclosure rules?
Yes.
People have always wanted to contribute without being known for doing it.
It's true. And, you know, you saw with Nixon and the milk money, there was these elaborate money laundering schemes to give a little bit of money to a bunch of parties and states. The difference is that was illegal, and what's happening now is legal, right? We have a system that just doesn't provide for disclosure of these categories of dark money. It's just there's no way of getting to it.
The Brennan Center also reports that single candidate super PACs are proliferating. Why are they growing in number?
I mean, basically because they provide an advantage to the candidates. I mean, we have this arms race where the candidates want as much money as they can. They can only raise money the most they can raise in a cycle is $5,200. That's the federal contribution limits. So they also want, for those donors who are willing to give, you know, $250,000 or $1 million, they want to have a single candidate super PAC out there in their corner that can take those enormous checks from the people who are willing to give them and spend in their favor. So it's a huge advantage for the candidates that can attract them, because it basically means the contribution limits are meaningless for those.
Are super PACs an outcome of Citizens United or McCutcheon?
Citizens United. Citizens United didn't directly make super PACs legal, but it said independent spending is okay. And then later court decisions said, well, we have to. There has to be this organization that allows entities to do that. And that's where super PAC was created.
Getting back to NY21, it's the largest district in the state. Much of the Adirondacks and the northern suburbs of Syracuse are in it. Wouldn't that mean that it would be of interest to people who are wanted to influence environmental legislation one way or the other?
Yes, I think that makes sense. And it's also, I mean, it's sort of interesting that is, you know, one of the larger towns in New York State, but it's not a huge media market. So the fact that there is that much spending there is
you example. Could pretty much dominate television
right.
with $750,000. Your report indicates this is now happening in congressional races. Is that new? Wasn't most of the money in the past focused on Senate races, gubernatorial races,
right.
presidential
the
races?
The presidential race has always gathered, attracted the most money. We've seen in congressional races on the Senate side as well. The greatest growth has been on the Senate side, but it's also true in House races. We've seen amounts of independent spending increase dramatically. Times when the total amount of money spent in a race might have been $1 million in the past. Now it's including inside and outside spending many, many times that.
The dark money doesn't go straight to the candidates, does it?
No, that's right. It has to be spent independently of the candidates, although watchdog groups like the Brennan Center have concerns about whether that requirement of independence is real, whether it has any actual teeth to it.
There, as part of McCain-Feingold, was it? Candidates were saying at the end of their ads, I'm so-and-so, and I support this message. They don't have to do that with these ads.
Right, because they're not supposed to be involved in the ad at all. Although what we see sometimes is that, you know, a campaign manager will quit the campaign and go and run one of these super PACs, obviously knowing all of the strategy. The campaigns can post their strategy photos, videos on their website, and the super PACs go and get those and put together an ad. They can see, you know, we're not going to buy ads in the first 3 weeks of October. So the super PAC knows there's a hole there. We're going to fill it with our ads.
It can sometimes lead to embarrassment, like when Mitch McConnell put pictures on his campaign site that could be used by dark money groups. And some of the pictures are rather embarrassing.
Right. It's sort of him sort of blandly signing documents and shaking hands with people.
And smiling a lot.
Yes. Yeah, right.
Derek from the Upper West Side asks, what prevents foreign nationals or corporations from contributing? Wasn't that brought up before the Supreme Court?
Yes.
Or that was something that the president later said he thought would be a real problem?
The president did say that would be a problem immediately after Citizens United. The Supreme Court did uphold a restriction on foreign spending in elections shortly after Citizens United. But the problem with dark money, of course, is we don't know where the money from those shell corporations is coming from. It could very well be foreign money.
And Derek wonders what effect that could have on corporation inversion policy that is currently in effect.
Right. I mean, the corporations already strongly support inversion and the tax benefits of moving money offshore. I don't think that we need foreign influence to make that situation any starker.
Actually, that's probably more American influence
right,
than foreign
exactly.
influence.
Those are the people that are saving tax money.
My guest is Ian Vanderwalker, who's here to talk about the Brennan Center for Justice report, Dark Money Groups Dominate Independent Spending in House Toss-Up Races. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. Are there any particular issues that there's more dark money addressing? Healthcare? Gun control, taxes, healthcare, I guess it would be Obamacare.
Healthcare is a huge one, in part because it is strongly opposed by the Chamber of Commerce, which is one of the biggest dark money spenders, and other similar industry groups sort of supported by healthcare consortiums or insurance companies, and also because it's seen as a wedge issue. It's seen as a place where in red states, it's unpopular. So the strategy on the right has been to connect the Democratic incumbents with this unpopular policy. So there's a lot of ads mentioning Obamacare saying so-and-so supports Obamacare and that's terrible for our state. So that's, I think, probably been the big thing this year.
But also gun control. Taxes remain one of the favorite targets.
Yes, yes, that's absolutely true. Those things might be sort of opportunistically used by the outside groups, but I think the thing that a lot of the dark money really truly cares about is things like Obamacare and regulations of big business.
Catherine asks, wasn't there a recent court decision limiting unions from demanding that members pay dues, and couldn't that influence political campaigns?
Yes, there's the Roberts Court, simultaneously with a string of decisions enabling more big money in politics, has had a string of decisions making it harder for unions to spend money on politics. So we've seen the unions are still strong and they're still spending a lot of money on politics, but it's possible for regulation to further weaken that.
And people argue they don't want to pay union dues because their money is going to go to support something they are opposed to.
Right. It's already been the case that union dues can't go to politics unless the member consents, essentially. So there's already been that separation, and the Supreme Court has sort of changed the rules around how to consent and who opts in versus opts out.
Since these are local elections that we're talking about, but federal policy, how much do oversight and disclosure requirements vary from state to state?
With federal elections, they don't. All federal elections are regulated by the FEC. State elections vary enormously by state to state, in terms of how the money is disclosed and how it's reported. And I should say that it's also the case that state parties are to some degree regulated by the states, and they can spend money in federal elections, so there is an effect.
In the aftermath of Citizens United, have any states tried to alter the regulation of political donations?
Yes, there have been states that have increased disclosure. There have been states that have tried to have rules that would allow shareholders a greater control over corporate spending in elections. The state of Montana effectively tried to say Citizens United shouldn't apply to us because of our unique history of corruption in the state, which went up to the Supreme Court and was struck down.
Doesn't New York have fairly lax laws governing state campaigns?
Yes, New York does have somewhat notoriously lax laws and even more lax enforcement of those laws in terms of state campaigns.
How are members of Congress or President Obama responding to the increase in spending by outside groups?
Well, President Obama, the thing he's mostly doing right now is going on fundraising trips, including trips that will raise money from outside groups. Unfortunately, Congress has been completely lackluster in its response to these things. Part of that is because Congress can't do anything. Part of that is because Republicans vehemently oppose campaign finance reform. But in general, it's just been a failure to improve disclosure, improve coordination rules, improve anything.
When politicians who have criticized these changes then take advantage of them, they're called hypocrites. But they defend themselves, President Obama did, by saying, well, this is the new reality. You've got to live within it.
Right. It's true. I mean, they talk about, you know, unilateral enforcement, disarmament, and fighting with one arm tied behind your back. You know, it's true. A candidate takes the rules of the campaign as they are, and they need to do the best they can.
I was interested in noting that conservative Oklahoma Senator Tom Coburn criticized dark money television ads that targeted one of the candidates for the seat he's vacating. Do you know whether Coburn has criticized all dark money or just the ones that target people that he supports?
I don't know his history, but I do know that in Alaska there was a kind of funny moment in that Senate campaign, which has been one of the most expensive. There's been, I think, $7 million of outside spending there. There was a moment where the candidates asked each other, the Republican candidate asked the Democrat to disavow his outside spending, and the Democrat asked the Republican said, I won't disavow my outside spending, but you disavow all outside spending. And so there's this sort of war of words against each other, and neither of them could come to a coherent place, it seemed.
The New York Times described the groups as wresting control from the candidates' own efforts to reach voters. If candidates are losing control of their own campaign efforts, shouldn't there be broad bipartisan support to regulate or curtail dark money? Or is this another case of me criticizing something and then really want to take advantage of it?
I think it really is a double-edged sword. I think there are candidates are worried about outside spending on the other side. They're worried about the message getting wrong on their side. but they also want that weapon to hit the other guy with.
Does anybody openly advocate dark money, or is it more like a loophole that people will exploit until it's closed?
Oh, yes. But Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell says that anonymous spending is a great thing for democracy, and claims that it's part of free speech, even though the Supreme Court has consistently disagreed with that position.
We had a similar situation in California with Prop, I can't remember the number anymore, but the anti-same-sex marriage,
right, Prop 8,
where
yes.
people wanted the names of the big donors revealed, and the courts decided against that?
No, those, well, I'm not sure. There may have been some of the state donors may be still, but it's above a certain level, I believe, is the difference, and there have been attempts to sort of single people out or bring them into the media. That's a problematic practice for a lot of reasons, but it doesn't mean that every donor, and especially certainly not at the multi-million dollar level, deserves to be influencing elections in secret.
Mark Leibovich, who wrote This Town, said that he thinks that more politicians are going to Washington to enrich themselves. If you agree with that view, do you think that dark money could be playing a role?
I think, by and large, most people want to do what's best for their district and for their country. I think part of the problem is we have a system that doesn't allow people. There's incentives that don't allow people to keep playing that game. They say you have to be fundraising 4 or 6 hours out of every day. You have to worry about outside spending. You have to take votes based on knowing that these people are going to attack you or spend money for you.
What role does the fact that some candidates like Michael Bloomberg or Mitt Romney have a lot of money on their own can actually finance much of their own campaigns?
Right. One of the things people talk about, there's no point in regulation because these people can finance their own campaigns. Those people are actually in a very small minority, obviously. So it's a few people. And secondly, knowing that someone can spend $10 million of their own money, for example, on a campaign, just kind of is another factor in the arms race. It means that on the other side, that person has to raise money that much harder, has to be looking for those outside group supports, has to be looking to help keep special interests happy.
Mayor Bloomberg was reputed to have contributed $400,000 to the not-for-profit for Newark election.
He gives a lot of money. I mean, now that he's not spending it all on his own campaign, he's spreading it around.
Ian Vandewalker is part of a team at NYU's Brennan Center for Justice that is studying the trends in campaign spending, and their newest report is Dark Money Groups Dominate Independent Spending in House Toss-Up Races. Thank you so much for being on our show. You can find that report on the Brennan Center's website. And what is the website?
It's brennancenter.org.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.